Moncrief on News Talk.
Next, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, medical doctor and health advocate. Ava, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm standing in for Sean Moncrief. I'm not Sean Moncrief, in case you're wondering, unless he's had a hair transplant. Now, Ava, we're going to talk something very important, the dreaded Ozempic. Why is it always in the news? Is the next question. Now, I've spoken about it myself with Pat Kenny. It seems to be in the news constantly, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course, because we have such a huge and high overweight and obesity levels, and we are all battling with the weight on a daily basis. Statistics shows that if we don't try to maintain our weight, in a year we put approximately 2.5 to 5 pounds on weight just naturally. Right. So if we don't concentrate maintaining, so you basically have to do something actively. Otherwise, you are getting heavier.
Right. And this is no matter what you do, almost.
Yeah. So basically, because we are living in this world where there are foods everywhere around us, we are bombarded by advertisement. And I think the biggest problem is that we don't have knowledge. We are not educated. Doctors and nurses are not educated on nutrition. Only dietitians and nutritionists study it. But they don't work with doctors, and they don't see the blood results, and they don't see what it does to the body. So usually doctors send the patient to the nutritionist, the dietitian. So there is, in my opinion, there is this sort of non-communication between them, where I, as a medical doctor, see the patients, I take their bloods, and I also see what the change in diet, weight loss does to the body. And I suppose this is why I'm so passionate about it. Of course, I have done a few documentaries for RTE, you know, Medication Nation and Live Better Longer, and I have, you know, research they see it in over the last 20 years, all the effects that good nutrition does on people. And I think it's very scary how over-medicated we have come in this country. So if you think about polypharma, which means that you are taking more than 5 drugs on a daily basis, we're talking about typically people take cholesterol-lowering drugs, they take aspirin, take blood pressure medication. And now, of course, because we have over 200,000 type 2 diabetics, so diabetes, pre-diabetes is almost something like, it's like a new flu. So usually people take metformin. And then to basically counterbalance all this, we are taking Nexium, which is an antacid, so that we don't get the sort of all the, what the drug does to the stomach lining, that you don't get ulcers. So it's like there is a pill for every ill. And because if our overweight and obesity levels, over 60% of the population, so in today's world is more common to be overweight and obese. And so if you are normal weight, you are actually falling into the minority. So of course, if there is now a pill that is telling you that you take this, it takes your hunger away, you will miraculously lose weight, of course you are interested about it. Because, do you know what, let's just take a pill, I don't need to do the hard work. That's why we all want to know about
it. Well, that strikes me, Ava, the message, people want to have their cake and eat it. That great phrase, I imagine, is part of this. Do you ever prescribe Ozempic?
No, I'm not using it in my clinics. Saying that, I always say I want to support anybody, you know, to get to the Rome. I said there are different ways to get to Rome. You can go there with the plain fast way or slow way. Most important thing is that you do behavior modification and that you understand what to eat, why we eat. Because at the end of the day, your body needs certain, you know, we need the macronutrients, we need the fats, we need the carbohydrates, and most important, obviously, need the proteins. The problem is that we are bombarded by carbohydrates and our body loves carbohydrates. So that would be your pasta, your rice, you know, your cakes, your sugar. Obviously, usually people come to me and they say to me, Dr. Eva, I don't eat any sugar. I just had a lady yesterday. I don't eat any sugar. The only thing I have is a glass of wine. And I said, you are already lying. And I haven't even spoken to you. I said, how are you saying? Because people think about sugars as stable sugar, where all the carbohydrates are turned to sugar in the body and the digestion start in your mouth. So this is why your body's always thinking, if the famine hits, you know, and I have a good extra layer of fat, I will be the last to leave. So this is that the body is trying to sort of get more energy in case. And that's why I suppose, you know, we like so much the carbs. Yeah. And because the carbs also increase the sugar readings in your blood, you get your insulin going. Insulin is the fat storage hormone, the hormone of hunger. So more carbs you eat, you get this lovely roller coaster effect. So you have a nice, I mean, I'm a self-confessed chocoholic and I love sweets. And I suppose that's why I am this business, because I'm continuously fighting the devil that sits on my shoulder. Yeah. And the way I fight it is that I try to eat healthy meals and fill myself with fiber and vegetables and good protein so that I can afford to have a little bit of that indulgence. Yes.
Ava, are we fighting our instincts then? Because we evolved on the plains of Africa 200,000 years ago to gorge on food, didn't we? You know, and now we're gorging all the time. So it's difficult for people, isn't it? Because their instinctive response is grab that carb. Or grab that fat or whatever it is. And yet hard to resist then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And also because, you see, food is also comfort and we have a lot of challenges. We think we have challenges because we don't know what the real challenges are because we're actually very lucky in Ireland and this part of the world. So if there's anything a little bit upsetting, and we often even teach our children, if they start crying, we give them something sweet. So food becomes like a comfort if you are upsetting day or your relative is talking to you badly or your boss gave you extra work, said, let's go home and have a glass of wine and crisps. Yeah. So it's that comfort. And I think because the education is not there, that how to tackle the stress in different ways and how to understand how important is the diet.
Right.
And I suppose this is when we're talking about, for example, Ozempic. And now there's obviously a lot of people who say that they need to stay on the drug for the rest of their lives. And now people in the end come to their senses and they realize that they can't stay on something like that forever. Right. Some people get obviously side effects. That's why they stop. You know, it stops your hunger, but also stops your feelings. You know, people say they feel that they're very sort of numb.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of that actually.
I knew
there were side effects.
Yeah.
Is that a real
feature? Yeah, but it's basically you don't have the urge to eat. You're losing
part of yourself in a way.
Yeah, of course. It's not like an antidepressant, but it's that pleasure center is sort of.
It does have a role, Ozempic, in certain conditions, doesn't it?
You see, I would be very hesitant to say that because I have a huge interest in type 2 diabetes reversal, and all those type 2 diabetic drugs have long list of side effects. Now, of course, type 2 diabetes have already comes with the increased risk of cancer, but also the drugs that are treating type 2 diabetes usually comes with an increased risk of cancer. So it's very difficult to know, did the cancer come from the diabetes,
right,
or come from the drugs? But if we go back now, the last 20 years that I have been dealing with overweight and obesity, we have had number of weight loss drugs coming on the market. You know, they have been Acomplia, Reductil. There have been number of them. And all of those has been withdrawn in the end.
Yeah. Is that your prediction, Ava, that Ozempic will get withdrawn?
This is what I'm predicting because it has never happened before. And
yep,
if it's not withdrawn, then I would say that there are going to be more and more article out there, and now with the social media, you know, word is spreading. People who basically, when they come off the Ozempic, they actually feel extremely hungry.
Yeah.
And they basically, they're all their previous, either is it the rebound effect or the side effect, because the side effects from the withdrawal symptoms, right, comes on play now, and people just want to eat. And we don't exactly know where this effect comes from, that people feel extremely hungry afterwards. I would say it's a lot of the fact that you have been suppressing those, as I said, also feelings as comfort, because I think that certain when you have challenging situation, you don't feel them as strongly.
Right.
So now you go back to what you used to do.
Yeah.
And now because the hunger is there, you don't have any new way of dealing with it because you haven't changed your diet. The people who I see in my clinics, the people who weren't successful with Ozempic, who got the side effects, and they usually tell me that they just felt no need to eat whatsoever.
Yeah.
Many of them felt so sick that they couldn't eat. So it's not that people eat less and they eat better. They just eat less of the rubbish. So which means that they get even less nourishment.
Right.
And my theory, this is obviously not necessarily scientific based, but if you are on something like that for many months and your body is not in getting the vitamins and minerals and you come off it, your body is almost like an empty sponge that's desperately looking for protein and carbohydrates and fats, and it's tried to get it in any sort of form, and it sends you the signal, give me food.
Okay.
Obviously, we need to remember as well that overweight and obese people have also created these fat cells, and there's more of them than somebody who's skinny. So they're almost like dormantly looking there to be filled again. So that's why I feel so strongly about childhood obesity, and I think we should really address overweight and obesity in children as soon as possible so that we would, you know, not get them to be overweight
in the first place.
It's easier to prevent or deal with it when it's small small right. problem than when it becomes a big problem, because okay. it's so many aspects that you need to change in the person's lifestyle.
We've got some texts over coming. Are you ready for this one?
Yes. So,
great to hear Dr. Ava on the show. Can you ask her this question, please? Are some people just prone to weight, or are they just eating badly and not exercising? Some people claim that they eat well and exercise but can't lose weight.
I honestly think that we should send those people straight away to an Ethiopia and actually test it, because I think this is just a little bit of a rubbish. I think we don't need to be a doctors or nurses to understand that it's an energy balance in the body. But of course, there are many factors at play. We need certain amount of energy for our digestion and our metabolic functions, and then certain amount of daily exercise and activity levels. And unfortunately, that number is very small. So, for example, a woman of my size who weighs 60 kilos and 161 centimeters, if I drive and sit in my car and in my clinics, I only need around 1,300, 1,500 calories a day. But if you read a label in a box that you buy in shops, it says that you can eat 2,000 calories. So there's already around 700 calorie difference. That means that if you can eat 2,000 calories a day to maintain your weight, that already requires 3 times a week, at least an hour of walking and running behind the bus when you leave work. So we sort of overestimate, you know, yeah. the amount of calories we can burn on a daily basis, and we underestimate what we can eat. I just had an interesting situation with the patient in the clinic, was telling me how little they eat and all the rest. And then when I started to ask, of course, I found out that this person loved nuts and was snacking on them. There's 600 calories in 100 gram of nuts. So if you go for one drink in a pub and they put that little bowl of nuts in front of you, there's a nice amount of salt. You are just having 200 calories in a few almonds and things. So, and one pint of is 200 calories. So without knowing it, you could have just had 500 calories. So that's you know, a third or half of your daily requirements for food. Yeah. So this is where I think that we need education. And education is what I have been trying to do for the last 20 years in my clinics. It's a vital element in our weight loss programs in Dr. Eva's clinics. And we give recipes, we give a specific plan for people where we tell them exactly what to have for breakfast, lunch and dinner, what snacks to eat. And then when they come back, I say, now it's your time to complain, how we can modify this and make it. People need a hand to hold. They need specific advice. I believe
support is the key word. I mean, I remember reading recently, or a year ago, the only thing that works is Weight Watchers, apparently. All the diets, they were looked at scientifically, and most of them didn't really work. You might lose weight acutely, but you put it back on again.
Yeah, but
the Weight Watcher system was really supportive, wasn't it?
Yeah,
a network of people.
I don't want to go too much on the Weight Watchers, because Weight Watchers is more actually a marketing company who's trying to sell their own products, and their diet plans were purely based on their own products. But the whole thing is that any diet works if you stick to it. That's usually the rule
with support.
Of thumb. But the thing there is that once you come off it and you start going solo, it's to create that education that you don't need to eat exactly what I told you today. You can actually start making those choices yourself freely. Because at the end of the day, you will find me eating some Butler's chocolate there and having a glass of Sauvignon Blanc one of the nights out in town. But I don't do that every night. And I think that is the balance what I'm trying to teach people.
Another text, what absolute tosh. Let's start with that sentence. You've no idea why people overeat or why Ozempic works. Have you got a switch that tells you when to stop eating? I don't. Do you ever feel full after eating? I don't. Ozempic turns those switches on for me, and I eat normally. If I don't have Ozempic, I feel permanently starving no matter what I eat nor do. Now, obviously, that's somebody who's honest.
I would like to challenge this listener, because, for example, the current food pyramid that we're using in Ireland is very much still based on the many portions of carbohydrates, so your bread, rice and potatoes, where I actually believe that we should actually base our diet on vegetables. So get the fiber from a low calorie source, so basically low energy density source. And we're talking about 500 to 800 grams of vegetables a day. So I would like to say to this listener that what about if you actually try to make a homemade vegetable soup at lunchtime and then try to include another 300 to 400 grams of steamed or stir-fried vegetables in your evening dinner. Now you would be near to the 600 grams that's recommended a day. If you added extra grilled mushrooms or something for the morning and did an omelette, I would say that those changes alone alone, you would already feel a bit more fuller. Also, the fact that if you are relying a lot on the carbohydrate intake, which many Irish are, sorry, I don't want to judge here, but I hear people starting their morning with few slices of toast and putting butter over it. One slice of toast is 19 grams of carbohydrates. We're talking 40 grams of carbohydrates. So if you think about every 4 grams is 1 teaspoonful of sugar. Now you're giving this sugar boost. You're not seeing it as a sugar because it's toast, but that's what it's turning into your body. You're getting your high sugar reading in your blood. You get your insulin going and the insulin takes the sugar, takes it inside the cells and comes crashing down your sugar readings, and that's when you feel hungry again. So this is when people are relying on too much of the carbohydrates, and unfortunately this is where I would criticize the Food Safety Authority of Ireland, that we are very old-fashioned with the advice we are giving to people. Our food pyramid is still reflecting that, and how we can expect any change in this country if we don't actually, you know, change that and start educating doctors and nurses and health professionals about the importance of in the diet, the what macro and micro, nutrient we need to eat, and the importance of gut health. That's something that we could carry on. I think we can just stop the other topics you have for the evening, and I get going here with the gut microbiome next.
No, it's a really important part. Another one for you. I'm a registered dietitian. Again, sweeping statement from Ava. Contrary to what she said, most dietitians in Ireland are within the HSE and have access to bloods, so see the whole full picture and how intake affects the person holistically. There's just not enough of us. So we need more dietitians.
Absolutely. Yeah. A nutritionist. I mean, there's a huge need for that. But I think also what is important that the people who are, unfortunately, the dietitians who are working in the hospital, and I have been working in Loughlinstown Hospital in Ireland, and I know the system very well, they have to follow the current guideline. You can't work in a hospital and start giving your own advice. And you have to follow the food pyramid and the current guideline. And I hear that all the time in the clinics, that I went to a dietitian, whatever, diabetic clinic, and I don't usually hear good comments that they gain very much knowledge from it, because it's very much like, let's reduce, instead of having 2 Weetabix, let's have 1.5 Weetabix. Right. And it's this type of where, for example, type 2 diabetics should really, really seriously reduce their carbohydrate intake and have a totally different composition of the diet than what is currently recommended.
Right, another one. It's obviously a big debatable thing, and somewhat controversial, isn't it? Ava seems to be in conflict with Professor Donald O'Shea.
Absolutely. I know Donald. Absolutely. I worked with Donald O'Shea.
He's all for Ozempic being prescribed to anyone who wants it. Is he saying? I don't know whether he's saying
that. I don't know what he's saying, but I definitely don't agree with many things with Donald O'Shea, and I know him very well, so I would agree there.
But again, a lot of people are coming in supporting Ozempic in certain situations. So saying, look,
because those people maybe.
You never know. You never know. Well, what gets me, Ava, they're making so much money. Eli Lilly and Novo are making a fortune. Absolutely. So someone must believe in it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and obviously
and
the whole thing.
Professionals must believe
in it. And obviously, if you lose the weight, of course, you know, the visceral fat, which is the deep fat that sits behind the belly button, that is it's basically actively producing these inflammatory hormones, and it's straight linked to type 2 diabetes and most of the chronic conditions. Mm. When you reduce that, so when you lose weight, obviously this has a really positive impact on all other aspects of your life. So it's obviously the weight loss that Ozempic creates, of course, creates that's on your physical side. And of course, initially people feel very well because it's very psychologically rewarding when you start feeling yourself.
Yeah, is there a role then, acutely maybe? What we're really discussing is this rebound business. People on long term seems like a bad idea, but acute use, lose the weight and then get support.
Yes, of course. I think, you know, as I said, you know, I think the support should be there and a serious education from the beginning, and it's not there. So how can you expect people to learn? Like, whoever of these people have, when they got a prescription for Ozempic, got, for example, 2-hour assessment and an advice how and what type of food to eat. I mean, people are often just told, you know, eat less and exercise more. And exercise is only 10 to 20% of the overall calorie intake. So really, I, for example, say to my patients for the first week, I said, I don't want you to exercise because I want you to concentrate cooking the recipes that I'm telling you. I want you to have the soup in the fridge. I want to be prepared that when you feel hungry, you know exactly what to take.
What to do.
So you are, you are looking after yourself. And then the exercise comes late. Also, some people who are very heavy, exercise is a very difficult one because it can put huge pressure on the joints. And also people are very tired and it actually takes their spirit away. So I think it's important that we give people results. And yes, this is, of course, this is a controversial topic. And I would like to support anybody to lose the weight and right. encourage them because I think it changes your life.
Changes
like when you lose weight, it changes your life. You know, indeed. Nothing feels as good as skinny feels. And this right. is obviously politically not correct. Again, we yeah. can't say that in this movement of body positivity, but I believe that and I see and I hear that in my clinics every day.
Very good. Ava, thank you very much. That was
thank you.
Ava Orsmond, Medical Director and Health Advocate on the thorny subject of Ozempic, which we'll be returning to every week. It comes up again and again. Ava, thanks very much for coming in.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.